But you'd be surprised, man. The world is a crazy place.
This is one thing I always say to people is that I believe that people wake up every day and they leave the house and they try to do the best they can with the knowledge they have, the equipment they have, and with the resources that they have. I do believe that most people do that. Hi guys, welcome to another episode of What My Best Friend Does, where we talk about what your best friend does so you don't have to. Today, I'm talking to my best friend, the diversity, equality and inclusion leader, Ola Jide. Ola, how you doing?
I am good, thank you. It's so funny hearing you say Ola Jide instead of saying Junior. Just because obviously we've grown up and you've always known me as Junior. And now,
exactly.
And now everyone, I've changed. I've upgraded myself.
There we go. So from Junior to Ola Jide, we like to start off the podcast with a little icebreaker. My question to you is, what did you want to be growing up?
It depends. It's like different stages of my life had different things. So when I was like, say in primary school, I wanted to be an actor.
Okay.
And then when I was in secondary school, I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
But I think that's because of my parents. I won't go into that just yet. And then as I left secondary school and went into college, I wanted to open my own restaurant.
All right. But here we are as a leader in diversity, equality and inclusion. I know when we spoke about this last time, you don't even call it DEI, do you? What do you call it?
No, I call it equality, equity and inclusion.
Equality, equity and inclusion.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is that to you, equality, equity and inclusion? And why do you call it that versus the traditional DEI?
Oh God, I didn't realise you're going to be going into the nuts and crannies of this all. Right, okay.
We get deep.
Okay, fine. I didn't realise I was doing like a workshop. I have to charge you for this. So, everyone knows what diversity is. Diversity is encompasses all aspects of who we are as human beings, like our age, our religion, our sexuality. It also encompasses things like your socioeconomic background, your neurodiversity, if you're neurodivergent, and stuff like that. So diversity, to me, is every day. Mm-hmm. Everyone has diverse aspects of who they are as a person.
Yeah.
So actually, we don't need to focus on diversity anymore because as a society, we are actually extremely diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And diversity comes in so many different shapes and sizes, not just what you can see, it's also things you can't see. Whereas as a society, I believe that we have a problem with representation and with equity and equality.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by representation is that, to put it bluntly, you know, if you go into most businesses, the leaders of a business are majority white men. There is a lack of representation from a female perspective and an ethnic minority perspective when it comes to leadership in many businesses and even leadership within our government and stuff like that. So representation is the problem that we have.
The one black chancellor we had, look how long it lasted. No, quasi.
It was embarrassing. That's embarrassing. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah.
And then when you talk about equity and equality, so equality is treating everyone equally.
Mm.
However, equality is a law. So there is a law called the Equalities Act of 2010, which protects 9 protected characteristics, including your age, your gender, sexuality, disability, religion. So actually, it's a law. So I find it really funny when people are like, oh yeah, we're fighting for equality. And I'm like, but that's our legal right as human beings.
Wow.
And so what we try and talk about more of is less about equality and more about equity. Mm-hmm. And equity is about realizing that everyone is different and realizing that everyone needs different resources, different assistance to get them to the end, to the same end goal. So for instance, you went to school, you finished school, you graduated, I dropped out of school, we both started business and you both put on like a training program. I may need more help because I haven't finished school. So I need to be put on a slightly different training program or might need different resources or different support throughout. That is equity, and that's making something equitable for everyone.
Yeah, okay.
And so equity is what we really should be focusing on, because we can't continue going, we're treating everyone the same and treating everyone equally, because we're not all the same.
Mm.
We haven't all come from the same place. We haven't all had the same experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So equity is so much more important.
I mean, what a start, by the way. Thank you. Typically, he charges for that. But we just needed to kind of clear that up and set the foundations for the rest of this podcast. podcast. So following that, obviously you mentioned the fact that you wanted to be an actor, a doctor, own your own restaurant, and now here you are talking about EE and I.
Yeah.
Talk us through your journey to this point briefly. Like, how have you come to,
I love that
to
you be put, a leader in this? I love that you put briefly. Talk us through your journey briefly. I've got places to be. So I finished school. I went to college. I studied hospitality management at college. Back in the day, it was called an AVCE. Mm-hmm. That shows my age. It was years ago. And I really wanted at that point to open my own restaurant. I wanted to work as a chef. I actually wanted to go to Le Cordon Bleu in France. My parents told me that. They said I was an idiot. They said, don't be so ridiculous, they said. So I finished my OVCE at hospitality management, and I'd been working in restaurants for like since I was 15. Mm. So I'd been working in restaurants for a long time, and I just had this like, I need to be in restaurants. I love hospitality.
Yeah.
And what can I do? My parents wanted me to go to university. So I was like, I must go to university and study. Decided to go and do events management, where you basically learn how to put on parties. So it was a great 4 years in Leeds. At that time, I also continued working in hospitality, worked my way up to management. And yeah, that's how I kind of continued my passion of hospitality. So I worked in hospitality now for, I have been working in hospitality now for over 20 years.
Mm.
Started in restaurants, worked my way up to management, did hotels, bars, restaurants, and then moved into a support office role, which was how I got into like recruitment. So I worked in recruitment for over 10 years, did hospitality recruitment, perm, temp. And then moved in-house, went to work for Wetherspoons, headed up recruitment at Wetherspoons, left Wetherspoons, went to head up recruitment for GBK. And I'm within those two roles.
Gourmet Burger Kitchen, for anybody wondering.
Sorry.
No, that's all right.
Gourmet Burger Kitchen. We don't talk about that anymore. I got my redundant from there, and there were not nice people. shade. So those two roles, within the recruitment roles, you have, as part of your recruitment strategy, you have to build inclusive recruitment, you have to build, start talking about DEI and diverse recruitment. Mm-hmm. So I started to like get a feel for this kind of environment and this space. Mm. And when I was at Wetherspoons, I was really fortunate to have a ridiculous budget. So we launched a huge campaign with Wetherspoons around diversifying their recruitment advertising. And it was great. I learned so much. And I also then found that that's what I actually really wanted to get more involved with.
Mm.
And also like from previous trauma. So like, you know, as a black man in the UK, that I've, you know, unfortunately have faced racism. I have heard things in the boardroom being muttered or been said to my face. I've been treated differently to other people. Mm. I've been passed over for promotions because of the colour of my skin. And so I think the thing that drives me is the need to want to change the world.
Yeah.
And the need of wanting to not have anyone else go through the trauma that I went through in my career. So I always say to people, trauma is what got me to where I am now, because it has helped me. It's driven my need for wanting to change the world.
Yeah.
And then after I left Gourmet Burger Kitchen, I didn't leave, I got my redundant. After I got my redundant in the dirtiest way possible, I decided that enough was enough and I wanted to set up my own business. Set up Sisu with my friend Louisa. And Sisu is basically a consultancy that goes out to businesses, schools, to make them better and educate them on equality, equity and inclusion and well-being.
Wow. Okay, so it's focused mainly on schools?
No. So it's schools and businesses.
Okay, schools and businesses. And first plug, Sisu has his own podcast.
We do have our own podcast. On the Sofa with Sisu.
There you go. I've been invited on. You know, we're going to make that happen in future. But you can listen to it after you've listened to this episode. Once you understand what your best friends do for work, then you can get on the sofa with Sisu.
It is. Oh, it's funny because like we celebrated our third birthday this week.
Happy birthday.
I tell you, owning your business is not easy. But also like when you own a business and you're super creative and you have 101 different things you want to do at any one time, like one day I'll be like, let's open a restaurant. Let's open a Sisu inclusive restaurant. Let's start a fashion brand. And then it's like every day it's like a different thing I want to do, which is wild. But yeah, the podcast was one of those things that I was like, let's do a podcast.
And how are you enjoying it?
The podcast?
Yeah.
James, I feel like I've got James, my producer of the podcast, in my ear going, make sure you talk really well about the podcast. No, I love it. I love podcasting, but it's hard work. I listen to podcasts. I'm an avid podcast listener. I listen to so many different types of podcasts and I love it. And I've always thought, oh, it feels really easy just sitting there having a conversation. And it is just having a conversation, but the prep that goes into the podcast, the questions,
thinking. When you remember to tell people to read the document, right?
Yeah, exactly. The research that goes into it, we include loads of stuff around the news as well into our podcast, so you have to read up about the news. Like, it's, and then you've got the social posting afterwards to get people to listen to it. It's a full-time job.
It's a full-time job.
And I sometimes I go, I can't be bothered.
I hear you. And just before we get back to what we were saying, so on the sofa with Sisu, what are the main focuses?
So on the sofa with Sisu, the elevator pitch. God, I should have prepared all this stuff. On the sofa with Sisu, it's basically two friends chatting about what's going on in the world from an E&I and wellbeing lens, and taking everyday topics. Like, we take the news, we read the news, we take news articles, and we make it. We talk about it like real people would talk about it, and put a different perspective on it, and just go, well, actually, that's not right, and this is why it's not right, and this is how someone else might feel about it. So we do that. That's one of the segments. Well, the other segment that we do is we interview real-life people who are making changes in the world, who are making the world a better place, and we find out a bit more about their journey, about what they're doing, and then we have something that we call manifestation. So we manifest. We are so, centred by, you know, gratitude and manifestations, and just being really, really centered by Mother Nature and the universe. So we do a lot of manifesting. So we have this section where we manifest real shit into the world so that it happens for us.
As you said that, all I can think is Burning Man and ayahuasca.
Oh my God, I loved Burning Man.
There you go.
Burning Man was the best thing I've ever experienced.
Okay, I didn't even know you'd been there. There you go. I knew the manifestation come from somewhere. But no, the question here, really important. So what's your approach to building and fostering inclusive culture within an organization when you're working with those businesses and schools?
So I would always start with transparency and honesty. I think it's really important that businesses are transparent as to where they are, where they want to be, and how they're going to get there, and honest about when they make mistakes, because I think that's the only way that you build trust with your team. And that's really important when you're trying to foster an inclusive environment, is that everyone trusts that they trust that they can come into work and you're going to look after them. And that's all that people want to do. They want to go into work, feel like they've been looked after, feel like they've been valued, feel like they've been seen, and feel like they belong. And the only way you can build those, that culture, is by building trust and being really honest and really transparent. So those are the things I always say to people, it's the foundations of how you really create that inclusive environment. I also think that people need to realize that these environments, this inclusive environment, isn't something that happens overnight. It's a journey, and you have to take your people and your teams on a journey with you. It's so important. I think a lot of companies do a lot of things in silo, and a lot of things happen behind closed doors, and not everyone understands what's going on. And so you'll find that there might be teams that have no idea what's going on over here, but actually there's big stuff happening. So it's all about making sure everyone's involved.
Yeah, of course. That's the worst. And I mean, you've mentioned trust and transparency and building that from the ground up. I suppose in your role, walk us through a typical day and a typical week for you working with a potential client, or just in your day to day.
Well, it depends on how I feel and what side of the bed I've woken up on.
A productive side.
Let's talk about a productive Monday, not a Friday. So on a Monday, it depends really. My days are so different. I do a lot of work with Turtle Bay. So Turtle Bay were one of our first kind of clients that we started working with when we first started 3 years ago. And then Turtle Bay asked me to come and do more work with them, more on a full-time basis. So most of my stuff that I do on a day-to-day is to do with Turtle Bay.
Yeah.
And then I will then have my meetings with other clients around that. So for instance, this morning even, I had a meeting with a lady who Her name's Elaine, and she runs a disability inclusion consultancy. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I really realised and I really cherish is the fact that I don't feel the need to have to try and do everything myself. Mm. I don't know everything about everything, and yeah. I don't try and pretend like I do. Mm. I know a lot about my experience as a gay, black, Nigerian man in the UK. Mm. And so my experience is through those lens. There's other lenses that I don't know enough about. So yeah. I don't know enough about the neurodivergent world because I'm not neurodivergent. I don't know enough about disability. So I bring people in okay. and we bring people in that can kind of support us in those different spaces. Okay. And disability is something that we are trying to focus a lot more on. And with a lot of our clients have started to ask for it. Mm-hmm. A lot of like Turtle Bay is starting to move towards trying to be more disability aware. So I had a conversation with her and like that was the start of my day. And then I popped into one of our restaurants this afternoon just to see the team and just to catch up with them since I did some training.
Making
with
sure nobody's going around calling people the M-word.
Basic. No, that would never happen.
But you'd be surprised, man. The world is a crazy place.
Do you know what though? The thing is that the world is a crazy place, but I do believe that this is one thing I always say to people is that I believe that people wake up every day and they leave the house and they try to do the best they can with the knowledge they have, the equipment they have, and with the resources that they have. Mm-hmm. I do believe that most people do that. I think 90% of people, that is there every day. Yeah. I think, unfortunately, people are extremely uneducated. People live in bubbles that they don't know enough about anyone else's experience. And I think that's where I'm starting to really like pick up is that when I do training with clients, you go and do training with people and they're like, I had no idea that a black person experienced that. Or I have no idea that a transgender, like just like complete sheer like shock because they haven't had that kind of, that kind of exposure to any of those different experiences of those people. And like even today, this morning, I was talking to this lady, Elaine, from this disability inclusion consultancy. And she was telling me about some little thing, top tips to make things people feel more comfortable coming into the restaurant.
Yeah,
like something like having a time in the restaurant where the music would be lower, so that people that are autistic mm-hmm. could come in and feel less on edge with the loud music.
I would never think about that.
And I was just like, that's such an easy win because if you did that, you could, you know, you would attract. And she said to me, she said there is very few restaurants of high class that she could go to as a person with a disability because of access or because of not being able to read the menu properly or da 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 da. And I was just like, it's so amazing that I would never have known any of that because I don't have that lens on.
Yeah,
so.
Of course. How do you get the other lenses? Are you taking yourself to workshops? Are you just employing other specialists to do it? How do you bring yourself up to speed? Is it just conversations like you had this morning?
Yeah, so I think the number one thing for me is I'm really open-minded to listening to other people's experiences. Mm. Like talking, just generally talking and being curious and asking questions allows me to pick up the important things that I need to pick up mm-hmm. to be able to talk about it from that person's lens. I'm kind of like a bit of a, what's it called when you just soak it all up?
A sponge.
I'm a sponge. So I listen to people's stories. Mm-hmm. And people tend to tell me all sorts of stuff about their lives without me even asking. So I tend to pick up a lot of stuff about people's lives.
Yeah.
And so I use that. But also, like, I do a lot of research. I read a lot of stuff online. I'm connected to a lot of people within the DEI space who actually, they post blogs or they'll post videos. I'll watch them. The podcasts are such an incredible way of learning about different people's experiences, mm-hmm. which is why we started it. Mm-hmm. But I would listen to loads of podcasts as well that helps me to kind of gain that knowledge. But if there's something that I feel like I've got a gap in, I will just pick up the phone and call one of my network and ask them the question or put a little question out on LinkedIn and see if anyone answers and stuff.
And just so I'm clear, obviously we spoke about you doing like the 4 years in hospitality and working your way up through recruitment. Are you required to go to university to be in equality and inclusion?
It depends on who you talk to. Mm. Some people out there think that a degree is the be all and end all, but actually,
it's really not.
It's really not. Life experience is so much more valuable.
Facts.
Than I've come across people that are so well read, but have no life experience and so have zero exposure to the real world, and so struggle with understanding or having empathy with people because they are so used to it being based on theory.
Yeah.
Whereas all the work that I've done or we do in DEI, I always say to people, doesn't come from a textbook. Mm. It does actually come from speaking to people, real life experiences, storytelling. And obviously you can use the theory and the stats to back yourself up when you need to, especially when you're talking to more senior people in the business. But when you're talking to people on the ground, they don't want to hear 45% of people said this and 25% of people said this. They don't want that. They want to be spoken to and understand things from a real life experience.
Yeah. And then...
So the answer to your question is no.
And then, you know, you mentioned you do a lot of work with Turtle Bay, but then obviously you've got other clients.
Mm.
Are there any like strategies or initiatives that you can talk on that you've implemented, maybe not necessarily at Turtle Bay, but any organisation that you've worked with?
What are you asking? Say that again.
Any strategies or initiatives, right? So to improve equity, equality, right. Inclusion.
There's so many different strategies that you implement, but I think the thing is with DEI, the strategies are all quite similar in terms of, especially now at this time, because everyone's starting from the beginning.
Mm.
And so everyone's on the journey of, actually, we need to start off by understanding what DEI means.
Mm.
Then maybe train our leaders. And so everyone's on the same kind of path, mm-hmm. per se. Mm-hmm. I haven't really seen anyone any strategy that's been like stand out very different or we've implemented it any different to one another. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's all been quite similar.
I would
always say that the work we've done with Turtle Bay is incredible because they have been on a 3-year journey of exploration, and it, you know, what we've done with them, where they started off by training their champions to make sure that their DEI champions within their business were fully trained so they could champion it properly. Then we went on and did the leadership team, and then we went on and did the general population of the restaurants, and we trained them on with the power of inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Then we moved away from that and taught them about acceptable behaviour at work. And then we did anti-racism, and now we're about to do gender expression and unconscious bias. So they've literally just gone on a little journey, and mm-hmm. throughout that journey they've done surveys and they've done listening groups, and I think that's, they've literally taken on board every piece of kind of guidance that we've given them. And I think one of the key things that I think works really well is when we actually give a strategy and the guidance and people follow the guide rather than trying to...
Do their own thing,
but also to save money.
Mm.
The problem is that people don't want to spend the money. So actually what we see is that when people don't follow the strategy and they want to save money, so they go, oh, why don't we do those two workshops but do it as one workshop?
Mm.
Or why don't we skip those three workshops and do this one workshop? And then you find that it's also disjointed, that it doesn't land as well as it needs to land.
Yeah.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of different things you're doing with your clients. Basically, as you were talking, I was thinking a lot about senior leadership,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, just trying to understand whether there's a battle between people actually wanting to learn and, you know, be part of this, or people kind of using it as a tick box exercise, right?
Yeah.
And just doing it because they have to.
Yeah.
So from your experience, is this something that people actually want?
Yeah.
Or is it something that they're just doing because we want to appear to be a good place to work?
I think when we first started in 2020 with the murder of George Floyd, we had so many people come to us because they're from a place of fear of not doing anything. So they wanted to do something, and it became a bit of a tick box. We've done something, we've written some comms, we're fine. And so the first kind of 6 to 8 months, I feel like we just did a lot of tick box exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as time's progressed, now we're only really working with clients that actually want to make a difference. And actually, we're finding that a lot of people are coming at it from really wanting to make a change, but the problem is they haven't got the budget to be able to make the change.
I really hate when people say that.
Yeah.
Because like, how is this not the most important thing? Like, what do you mean you don't have the budget?
Yeah.
To me, like, maybe it's the sales in me, but what, you don't have the... But there's not enough money to be a good person.
Yeah, basically. That's what I always say. So it's funny because I say this all the time to Louisa. I'm always like, what I find astounding is that people are more than happy to spend £250,000 on a party for the staff, a team party, or to take their team to Marbella and be popping bottles.
Exactly.
More than happy to spend that kind of money. But tell them you want to spend £10,000 on some E&I training. They're like, oh my God.
Exactly.
We only budgeted £500.
Yeah.
You're like, what?
Exactly.
You'd spend £500 on like a lunch.
It's,
do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So it's like, how come you don't put the same worth in your team activities or your whatever to your team's well-being and your team's feeling like a sense of belonging and inclusion. So, but I just want to say I do feel like that there are people are changing their approach to the work and they are starting to see that it is more of a long-term investment. So like, for instance, we've had a recent client who's like, okay, we've done nothing on any of this stuff before. We've never done any sort of this kind of training before. We need to start from the beginning. And they've invested, and the way that they've implemented it is that they've gone in hard at the beginning and gone, right, we're just going to train all our leaders in our business and then we're going to do that. And they've literally, he came to me and said, this is what I want to do and kind of made the strategy themselves. And yeah. I was a bit like, wow. And money wasn't an issue. And it was just like, this is what I think we need to do. Do you think that's okay? And I was like, yeah, but I'd tweak it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then when you sent him the invoice, there was no questions asked. It was like, yeah, cool, done. Next one, yeah, cool, done. And that's kind of like, I always say to people, I know it's really difficult, but there's so much research that you can do yourself before you go and approach a consultant. Mm-hmm. I do think that it's important that you do your own work so you know where you want to go, what's your goal, what does good look like to you? Because if you come to us and tell us to shape what good looks like for you, it's really difficult because we don't know your business well enough.
Yeah.
So it's really important that you kind of have an idea of where you want to end up. And most of the time, I think at the back of most people's heads, they do know where they want to go or where they want to end up, but they're sometimes like scared to say it.
I've got so many questions. The first is that as a consultant, do you work with internal DEI representatives and a system, or are you working with companies who just don't have the department and you're coming in to be that department?
Both. So we've worked with companies where they've got an internal DEI team. We've worked with companies that don't have any at all. We've worked with companies that are setting one up and we've helped them kind of facilitate that.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes at different angles. There isn't one that I prefer working with more than another. I think we've had CEOs come and approach us and say, well, actually, as a CEO, I want us to do something. And
that's how it should be.
And I love that because I'm always like, I love when a CEO is like, we need to do this.
Yeah, because culture comes, it's top down, right? Like yeah, everybody needs to learn.
It tends to be HR though. It tends to be really? A HR team that will reach out and be like, we're from the HR team, we need to do some training. And I think it's always been a HR piece of work, but I think it's not a HR piece of work, it's a marketing operations, it's everyone.
And I think you need the buy-in from the most senior people. So
you do.
Hey, maybe I should come and sell your consultancy services for you.
I just had a little spark moment. I was thinking, why haven't we got you to come in and
just because to me, like,
we were looking for a salesperson a while back, we interviewed as well.
To me, there's two things here. Number one, every company needs this. So the funnel is endless,
yeah.
Right? The pipeline. And then the second thing is, and it's the question I want to ask you, like how long do these projects take? And the answer is kind of, it's ongoing. You can never complete this, right? So typically how long do you work with your clients?
Well, it depends. Like, I mean, we've been working, Turtle Bay is 3 years now. Mm. We've been working with them. Some of our other clients, it's like a year. Some of them, we do one project with them and then we kind of give them the tools to go off and do it themselves. It depends on each client. But what I always say to people is that you start this work and the intensity of when you start it is quite high. And for the first 2 to 3 years, you're probably doing quite a lot of training, quite a lot of culture changing, and the conversation becomes quite monotonous because you're repeating yourself a lot, because you have to really do that to be able to change the way that people talk about this work and they approach it.
Yeah.
And then eventually it becomes embedded into your everyday culture. And actually before you realize it, it doesn't need to be a huge focus because it's already inbuilt into your everyday. Where we've seen the success so far is where actually clients that we've worked with or brands we've worked with, where you go, where their E&I training isn't classed as E&I training anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's just classed as training.
Yeah.
And actually you've seen that their E&I policies are just policies.
Yeah.
And it's less of a label.
That's what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the ultimate praise, right? When you don't see it as a label and just a way of being.
Yeah.
That's ultimately what you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think one of the things as well that we're so passionate at CSU about talking about is the correlation that the E&I work has with well-being. Because imagine, right, scenario here for you. Imagine going into work every day and not feeling like you belong.
Mm.
Going into work and feeling undervalued. Going to work and feeling unseen.
Mm.
Going into work and people not really understanding where you come from, not understanding your culture, taking the piss, making snide remarks. Imagine how that makes you feel on a day-to-day basis if that's happening every day. You're going home
as well. The compounding is crazy.
Yeah, literally, you're going home, you're like pissed off, you're maybe slightly depressed, you have anxiety.
Mm.
Your well-being, your mental health, your physical health is mashed up.
Yeah.
Like completely mashed up. And I think people forget that this work isn't just about doing the right thing, but it's also about protecting your team's well-being and protecting your team's mental health because the knock-on effect, if not done properly and if not done at all, can be detrimental.
Pay the 10 grand. Jesus Christ, do you need me to...
Do you know,
you
what,
know
I mean?
What I mean?
Just pay. And I think the thing is as well, like, I always say to people, because people go, oh, it sounds like a huge task and like, we haven't got the time or the manpower and the focus right now. It doesn't have to be a mammoth task, right? You can start off by doing small, little, tiny things, small, little changes.
Yep.
And then eventually those small changes turn into big kind of changes. And before you know, you've really moved the dial and you've only done little bits here and there. I do think that people think that when you talk about DEI work,
you have to
DEI work.
Do a massive overhaul of the way people think.
Yeah, you have to like sack people and you have to change policies and you have to like revamp your whole recruitment process. Like, no, like, come in, get someone in, get us in. come in, look at the business, give you an evaluation of what we think the business needs.
Mm.
Right, let's get the strategy written and some suggestions of how you can make improvements. Do a little survey and then you make the little improvements bit by bit, and you chip away until eventually it becomes your everyday norm.
So, perfect. And on that, chipping away and it becoming your everyday norm, how do you measure the effectiveness of what you do? You know, you mentioned that previous client who, you know, now they don't look at it as, you know, DEI training is just training. Yeah. Are there any like key things that you're looking for to track kind of change and progress?
You sound like one of my clients. How do we measure change? How are we measuring success? It's really difficult to measure the success of this work. But one of the key things, indicators, I always say is, you know, when we start the work, we always suggest doing a survey.
Okay.
Whether that's an engagement survey, whether that's specifically a DEI survey or a E&I survey or wellbeing survey, check in with your teams to find out how they feel. Get a score on that specific area of your business, and then you can monitor how that improves or how that goes down. Another way to measure the success is through your retention. So, you know, if your retention is improving, you know, it's because your team's starting to feel a sense of belonging.
That's
it's because they're starting to feel like they can come into work and they're being respected.
Mm-hmm.
So retention stats are another great way of measuring success. I always think as well, like, what are people saying about your business out there? Like, when the people leave, so Glassdoor reviews and your Glassdoor ratings is another great way to measure the success of this work as well.
Okay. Look, you said it's hard, but you just gave three very compelling ways.
It's because I've had to do it so many times now, and I'm like, those are the top three. But there's probably loads of other ways as well. Like, you know, if you're a guest, if you're a customer service business, you know, even like what how your customers are feeling from your team's service.
Mm.
If you're seeing an improvement in your reviews or improvement in, you know, or less complaints on your customers, then, you know, you can maybe say that that's because your team are able to give a better service because they feel more included, they feel like a sense of belonging.
Yeah,
and they're able to more empathize with the guests or the team or the customer, sorry, that are coming into your business because they have a better understanding of those different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So actually they can handle different types of customers on a day-to-day basis. Again, another way of measuring the success.
But what steps do you take to address unconscious bias and promote awareness amongst employees? And just while you think about that, I don't even know if this is related, but I need to talk about a story from back in the day when I worked at my old employer, not my new one. We used to have like a Sonos speaker.
Yeah.
Anybody could connect to the speaker.
Mm.
Whenever Drake would come on or they'd be swearing, the HR woman would go, "Bio, turn it off."
You know,
that's unconscious bias, right?
Do you know how many times I've heard that sort of story from different companies? It is literally,
I couldn't believe it.
I have been to so many different businesses and done listening groups, and that story of the speaker and the music and the people from ethnic minority background has come up time and time again. And yes, it is unconscious bias. Is it unconscious? And maybe it's maybe more conscious. I don't know. It depends on the person. But unconscious bias, right, is one of those things that I think people think there's a fix for it. There isn't a fix. You can't run away from unconscious bias. Unfortunately, unconscious bias will always be there because of the way that our brains are made up.
Mm.
The only thing that unconscious bias training does, it makes you more aware of when those biases.
That sounds awful. it's like having surgery on you whilst you're alive.
Yeah.
Whilst you're awake.
It's literally making you more aware, so that when it does happen, you can kind of stop yourself from making those decisions.
Yeah.
I think for me, you know, stereotyping and unconscious bias, it's all about awareness. It's all about making yourself more aware of when you might stereotype, when you might fall into unconscious bias ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, if you're a senior member of a senior manager or someone that's making decisions for a business,
mm-hmm.
and you know your unconscious bias can sometimes hinder who you might work with or who you might employ, then you need to make sure that you've got other people in the decision-making process to ensure that there is equality or equity within that process.
Mm.
And that's where, if you go on unconscious bias training, that's the sort of thing you learn from that, because they tell you that, you know, if you're making a decision and you know you've got a bias between a certain brand or a certain type of people, then you need to make sure that you're bringing in someone else to make the decisions with you.
I'm just shaking as I think about some of the things that have happened to me in the past. And I think the sad thing is that, and especially, you know it growing up, being black, we've just come to kind of accept it as, oh, this is just the way the world is supposed to be.
I actually haven't.
Okay, good.
I haven't.
Damn, good.
I haven't.
Good.
I think for a long period of time, I did. I was just like, you know, yeah, cool. I'm going to get treated differently because I'm the colour of my skin. I think, you know, as black people in the UK, we get taught that by our parents, that, you know, unfortunately, you're going to face racism. Unfortunately, this is how, and it was just like, there was no like, but you need to stick up for yourself or you need to make a difference. There was none of that. And I remember when I first started doing this work, my parents were like, racism's been around for years. You're not going to be able to change it. And I'm like, well, that's the fucking attitude. That's the wrong attitude. And that's why we're here where we are,
exactly.
Because people haven't been fighting. People haven't been pushing back. And we've sat back and gone, oh, it's just how it's meant to be. And actually, I love the fact that younger people now are resistant. They're like, they're pushing back.
Mm.
They're holding businesses more accountable for their actions, because actually, no one deserves to be treated unfairly. No one deserves to feel like they are different or othered from other people. It's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a stand now. You fuck.
Yeah, don't sit back and go, oh, it's just how it is. I think sometimes I talk to my brothers sometimes I talk to them. and I say to them, I'm like, do you two not really face like any sort of like racism or like any sort of like bias or anything? And they're basically just like, yeah, not really. Or like, yeah, but can't be bothered with it. It's not really my problem, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I find it so, and I think I've met quite a few people now from different ethnic backgrounds or different marginalized communities who are just a bit like, I can't bother to fight the fight.
And I think
I want to keep my head down,
yeah,
get what I need to do, get paid, go home, live my life.
Yeah.
I don't want to go into work and be, you know, protesting or whatever. And I kind of get it, but then, you know, what are we setting the future up for the next generation?
Moral of the story, stop being selfish. And I can say that because I know that I'm part of that.
Yeah,
so that's basically what it
basically
is. Yeah.
Moving on.
You know, we've spoken a lot about EEI, DEI. What is an emerging trend that you've noticed in the industry?
Lack of education and resource. I think...
Oh, wow.
I think that everyone wants to learn, but no one knows where to get the information from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I keep everyone always, whenever we speak to clients, they always want resource, information, like educational resource, which is something that what CC was trying to work on is creating some more educational resources that people can just tap into whenever they want on demand.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like a Netflix style sort of on demand service.
Like a show?
Like shows, like different types of shows. So like basically like videos, footage, okay, talking about a topic that you can just tap into and learn something about. Mm-hmm. I think there's a need for more of that kind of information, like more of these kind of conversations where you're talking about things, subjects that people don't know enough about. So, mm-hmm, you know, and I think that's definitely something that a trend that I've noticed.
Okay. And then in follow-up to that, what's a common misconception about DEI and EI? So something that people assume and it's just not true.
I think people assume that people do it for free. I honestly do. I had this conversation last week with one of our guests, Lorraine, and I think people assume, especially if you're black or brown or from a marginalized community, I think people think that you're just doing it out of the goodness of your heart to change the world for the next generation. Mm. And actually, you don't need to get paid. And that people are like, oh, you know, obviously you're volunteer. Clearly you're volunteering. No. You're volunteering or you're a charity. And I think I also think that people think that anyone from in the DEI space knows everything about everything. Mm. Obviously, like I said to you before, like I can talk very openly and very like passionately about the black experience, about the gay experience. I can probably talk about the female experience only from a little bit because I've got a lot of female friends. Mm. I can talk about, you know, parenting because I've got a lot of friends that are parents. Yeah. But there's certain spaces that I wouldn't dream of talking openly, passionately about because I don't know enough about it. Mm. And I think people always assume that if you're a DEI consultant, you know everything about everything. Mm. And I think that's, again, another misconception.
Yeah, and do you know one? I think we spoke about it previously, not today. That is a misconception. And, you know, we kind of touched upon it, is the fact that people think that, oh, yeah, if I hire one black and I hire one
Asian, yeah,
I've hit my quota. Yeah, yeah. That is not how it works, yeah, right?
Do you know, it's what actually I mean? Funny because I was reading an article about quotas this week, and it was somewhere recently, it's been in the news about how they had a quota and they were actually positively discriminating against people, white men. And so they were stopping them from progressing in their careers because they had a quota of people from marginalized communities or ethnic backgrounds that they had to get into that company. Mm. And so they were stopping those white men from progressing. Mm. And they put a claim in against them to say, you know, you're discriminating against us. And I think they were in the process or they've won. And I think the problem with quotas is that you will discriminate against some other people.
Yeah.
And the point of this work isn't about filling quotas. Mm. The thing about this is it's about
Changing mindset,
but ensuring that you are having a fair recruitment process or a fair progression process to ensure that it's equitable. Mm. And also that you're able to eliminate any bias that might come into play within that process. So that then if someone that is black or someone that is white or someone that's female comes in to interview, they are interviewed the right way. Mm. And that's for the person that gets the job is the person that's right for the job.
Yeah.
Regardless of their colour, or their creed or their gender. I hate boxes. Mm-hmm. I hate categories. Mm. And I think from being younger, I was always put into a box. So you're black, so you must be this certain way. You're a black man and you're big, so you must be a criminal. Mm. Or, you know, you must be aggressive or whatever. Mm. And I think the problem with this work, and I've started to find, is that it can feel like you're just continuously keeping people in boxes. And actually what we really want is just unity. I want to be able to walk out the street and not be like, oh, they're black, they're white, they're Asian. I just want, we're just human beings at the end of the day. And everyone should just be human beings rather than being gender, him, her, they, black, white, Asian, gay, straight. Like all these labels just gets ridiculous. And the more labels we're creating, the more divides we're creating as
That's
well.
That's exactly it, yeah. We're just one species. We're
yeah.
one human race.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Agreed. All right, we've spoken a lot about your job. Two questions I have. So we'll start negative first. what would you say the most stressful aspect of your job is?
Like through my head. I think the most stressful is trying to keep everyone happy. At the end of the day, we didn't start Sisu to become millionaires, but we still need to pay our bills. So when clients sometimes say, oh, you know, we can't really afford that. And then they say, oh, you know, well, it might leave it till next year. I get stressed because I'm like, oh, I know, I want to make sure that we can still help you. Because at the end of the day, all I want to do is help people. Mm. And that can sometimes be quite stressful, trying to make sure that everyone is happy, mm-hmm. And that everyone is satisfied and getting what they need from this experience.
Mm-hmm. Pay the 10K. and then, yeah, on the flip side of that, what would you say the most rewarding aspect of your job is?
I think the most rewarding is when you see... you can see the change and you can see people, you can see those, what I call the light bulb aha moments when you have training or when you have a conversation with people and you can really start to see that people are like interested. That's so rewarding when you, especially when you sit at the end of a training session and someone comes up to, and I've had it quite a few times now where people are like, I honestly came into this session thinking it was going to be bullshit. Mm. And I've now walked out thinking, bloody hell, I've learned so much and it's been so useful. Mm. And when it ends with a hug or a handshake, I'm always like, oh my God, thank you so much.
Yeah. Amazing.
That's rewarding. And that's the change that you want to see, really.
Talking about, like, you know, all of the different DEI, you know, leaders and workers that you've worked with in the past, what would you say is an uncommon skill amongst all of the best people?
What's an uncommon skill, really? What would you destine for? What would you?
He's throwing it back on me.
What would your definition of an uncommon skill be?
I mean, I don't know. It literally can be anything. Okay. I mean, because you know what? What I would say is that when I ask people, you know, oh, you know, what are the common skills you see in people who are successful? They just go, oh, they can communicate. They have lots of energy. It's like, so something that you wouldn't typically hear somebody say when they're praising somebody.
I think that the most uncommon skill in this space is empathy. Mm. And I think a lot of people don't have that skill mm-hmm. of empathy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't have that skill of empathy. Like, I'll tell you this funny story, actually. The other day, my mum was at my mum and dad's house, and she was telling me that she fell over. She was telling me, I fell over twice this week. She said, I fell over twice. The first time I was at the gym when I was on the gym ball. I misplaced my leg and I slipped and fell on my face. And I was like, oh, okay. And then the second time she was walking in from shopping and she had loads of shopping bags and she walked into the front door and forgot there was a step and tripped up. Oh. And this is what she said. I flipped three times into the house. And the first thing I said to her was, you need to be more careful, mum. You're getting too old for this nonsense. And that was the one time where I've literally sat back and I went, I was so empathetic. Mm. But that I think empathy is something that we don't all possess. And sometimes in those certain moments where someone says something to you, you say the wrong thing and you're not really listening to what they're saying and being empathetic with their story. So I think empathy is something that, you know, it's a skill that not everyone possesses and you need to possess in this space. And I think those people that are really successful in this space are really empathetic, okay. And they're really good listeners, but listening intently. Mm. And what I mean by listening intently is the amount of people that talk to me about their stories and their lives and share stuff with me or complain about stuff. I mean, I literally just came from a restaurant where someone was complaining to me, and it's just listening. It's not even listening to, like, give an answer. Yeah. It's listening to just let them vent and agreeing with what they're saying and nodding and smiling. And I think that's a skill that you really need to have and possess in this space, is being able to listen intently to what people are saying, because sometimes people are giving you a sign that they need support in certain ways or they need help in something. And actually, if you're not listening properly to what they're saying, you won't notice those sort of cues.
Yeah, I hear it. So we've spoken about the wider community. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to focus on you.
Okay.
What do you think has made you successful? Up to this point?
Oh, I don't know. I don't class myself as successful. Jesus.
That's fair. Humility.
I don't class myself as successful. I truly believe that it's just from being me. Mm. Like, I think there were so many times in my life, in my career, that I've been told that me wasn't good enough or that me was needs to change. Mm. I remember being in the boardroom once and being told that my laugh was too much and that I needed to turn my laugh down. And there's been, And I think I've continued to be true to myself.
Yeah.
And I will continue to be true to myself. Even like, even my parents sometimes, bless them. My mum's actually said it to me so many times. Your laugh is too loud. You need to learn how to laugh like sensibly when you're in public.
I can imagine. And, I'm just
a bit like, you know what? No, I'm going to continue being me. And I think that's why I've been so successful, because people have warmed to me just being me. And when I talk in public, it's the same way that I will talk with my friends. I don't have a work persona and a home persona. And my persona is one. Mm-hmm. Like, I get that some people feel like they need to switch it up a bit sometimes when they're in different areas, but I don't.
Yeah.
I feel like having too many faces can sometimes be a bit dangerous.
100%.
So, yeah, I think just being me has really helped me be successful.
100%. And if I talk about my own experiences, I think... yeah, when you're yourself and you're honest about situations, it allows you to really build trust. And especially like in my role in customer success, being able to build that trust allows you to navigate both positive and like really negative times. Because when you're delivering bad news, people, they'll know that you'll kind of do anything to kind of resolve the situation rather than thinking, oh, this is crap, I'm going to leave. So I agree, being yourself... The truth will set you free.
Yeah. Right?
And trying to be something you're not, it just doesn't work.
It really doesn't. I really believe that that has been... And I've also think that one of the other things is that I always say it to everyone. I'm always like, I'm nothing but honest. Mm-hmm. I'll always be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sometimes too honest, maybe. but I think honesty really helps. And I think people know that I'm honest. So people will come to me for an honest opinion about stuff.
Yeah.
People will come to me for my opinion because they know that it will be... centered from the, it'll come from the right place, but it'll always be honest.
Now, just trying to give some goods to the listener. It's all been goods, by the way. But from a productivity standpoint, do you have any productivity hacks?
Music feeds my soul.
Okay.
I mean, I think everyone will find something very different that feeds their soul. But I think we take work too seriously.
Yeah.
I have learned that sometimes you just need to just have a bit of a laugh. And don't take yourself too seriously. Mm-hmm. So one of my hacks is definitely listening to music. It helps me be productive. One of the other ones is making sure that I have regular breaks so that I'm not stuck in front of the computer screen too much.
100%.
And, you know, making sure that you take time for yourself. Like, I think when we first started Sisu, for the first year, I don't think we took any time to ourselves.
Yeah.
To, like, just sit back and enjoy the fruits of our labour.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that you find time for yourself and find time to have fun, because it helps you be more productive in the long run.
And obviously, being a business owner, doing what you do, would you say you have a good work-life balance?
No. I will tell you now, I do not have a good work-life balance at all. I'm getting better.
Okay.
My partner will tell you that, you know, my head is forever at working. You know, Louisa and I have started this business 3 years ago, and it's something that we continue to think about how we're going to make it better. And so my brain is always thinking about, how do we make this better? Who do we need to speak to? Where do we need to go next? It's always going. Saying that, I always make sure that I go on nice holidays, and I take time out and stuff like that. And I think a couple of years ago, was it maybe last year, I went on a holiday for like the first time I had been on holiday in ages. I took my laptop with me.
Oh my God. No.
And I think my partner came and met me out there when he was on holiday. He's like, why is your laptop here? And I was like, because work doesn't sleep.
No.
And I've learned now not to do that ever again. So, you know, I think one of the things about being a business owner is about you learn from your mistakes, and you have to grow, and you learn and grow as time progresses. But yeah, my work-life balance is getting better. I'm going to finish this today, and I'm going to go and treat myself to a cocktail.
And that leads me nicely into my next question, right? So you've mentioned that you go on holidays. How do you actually unwind? So in those moments where you're not working, how do you unwind for anybody who might be overworking themselves and listening to this podcast?
So I have to go to the gym at least 3 times a week for me to not feel so stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that if I don't go to the gym, because I travel a lot for work, so if I'm traveling, and I'm say I've travelled for like 4 days a week or 5 days a week, by the end of the week, I feel really stressed.
Mm.
So the gym in it really helps me unwind. Just spending time with my partner, with my friends, really helps. Also just spending time on my own. Like, as I've got older, I wouldn't dream of doing anything on my own ever before, like ever. I would always want to do stuff with my friends, my family. Whereas now, alone time is so precious. And so like, I always make sure I try and find some time for myself, not for myself when I'm at the gym, but literally sitting on the sofa, watching TV on my own, or sitting and listening to a podcast on my own. But having time to myself is really important.
I feel it. And on that note of the gym, if anybody from Third Space is listening, I said I'm going to get sponsorship from them for this podcast. So, Third Space, another shout out. Good gym, good sauna, good classes.
So expensive.
That's why we need it for free.
I have enjoyed the Third Space guest pass on so many occasions.
There you go.
And I love it, but I would never spend that kind of money. I mean, I'm happy with my... I go to...
We're going to bleep it out. No, don't tell
all my All my friends go to really expensive, bougie gyms.
Yeah.
And I think I might be the only one that goes to, like, an Anytime Fitness. I've always been an Anytime Fitness kind of guy or a Pure Gym because it's just simple, it's easy, and I don't need any like, you know, glitz and glamour. It's just go in and get my job done.
Look, that was free advertising. We're gonna let it go this one time.
No, but all good.
Olajide, this has been such a great conversation. Just a couple of things before we get into the quick fire round. People might be listening to this and thinking they want to get into this now, right? Like,
what, DEI?
Yeah.
Don't.
Oh my God.
Joking.
He's joking. So for anybody who's looking at this and, you know, is looking to either start their career and get into DEI or completely change careers like you did and get into DEI, what would be your key bit of advice to them?
I guess it's about finding your why. Like, why do you want to do this work? Because it is thankless. I'm not going to lie. You know, you're not making businesses loads of money. You can't see...
But I think you are you are...
Long term.
Yeah.
But you're not affecting the bottom line straight away.
Yeah.
You're not bringing in loads of money. You're not a salesperson.
But you are making people more productive.
You're making...
But not
immediately. Yeah. So like for the first... You have to really know why you're doing this. Mm-hmm. And I also think you have to have dealt with your own traumas in this space to a certain extent, because you will be triggered. I mean, when I first started, I remember we were sitting and doing an anti-racism workshop and someone was like, I don't know why we're doing an anti-racist workshop. My partner is bald and he's from Newcastle and he gets racism all the time. And I was just like, this is literally just after George Floyd was murdered. And I was like sitting there going, Louisa, you're gonna have to take it because I'm gonna blow. Yeah. And you can't do that. You can't do that realistically. So you have to have dealt with your traumas and have a coping mechanism in case you do get triggered again. And I'd also, my advice would always be as well, be prepared to deal with loads of pushbacks. You have to be someone that's quite strong. Because there will be pushbacks. There will be that one person in the training workshop that doesn't want to be there, who will be disruptive and who will say things that you probably shouldn't say in a training workshop. So you have to kind of, I don't want to say you have to be thick-skinned because that's not the right thing, but it's just about being a bit more...
Resilient.
Being a bit more resilient, yeah, it's really, really important. And one of the things that I've really found really helpful in being in this space is having someone to talk to, whether that's your partner or whether that's a therapist. It really helps.
Amazing answer. And just last thing, so you know, you've spoken about wanting to make a change to the world. You know, where do you see yourself in the next 5 and 10 years?
So I think we've just started getting into schools, so like I want to get into the education space. Mm-hmm. I think the only really real way to make an impact for the future is to start in the schools and look at the syllabus. Like, I would love there to be a syllabus in school, a DEI syllabus or some sort, because I don't think we don't teach it. So
1000%. I think especially racism.
Yeah.
Sorry to like hone in on that, but it's definitely taught, because I used to work in a creche and kids do not see colour. Right. When they're 2 years old, they're 3 years old, they do not see colour. But then all of a sudden they start not liking people.
I think it's secondary school.
It's mad.
I do think it's secondary school. I believe that that's where something happens in secondary school and kids become more aware of the differences. But I don't know if it necessarily happens still now in schools. But I do think there is a need for education around treating everyone equally and fairly, and having creating and letting kids understand the importance of making sure that you're nice to people, because you don't learn that. And I do think that, you know, if you know better, you can do better. And we can't expect kids to come out of school, go into the workplace, and know that without telling them it at some point. So I do think it's important. I would love to do, you know, loads more seasons of podcasts, maybe doing a TV show. I have said, you know, maybe see me on BBC soon, on this BBC special.
Just let me be an extra or the supporting actor. let me get BAFTA. Best supporter.
You never know. I do feel like maybe there might be a little, you know, little something on the horizon.
Oh, wait. Come on, manifest it.
Manifest. What else? I do you know what? I just, to be honest, all I want to do is continue to make an impact in businesses, in schools, and in everyday people's lives. If we can throw in a fashion label in there and a restaurant, then, you know, amazing.
But, you know, life is good.
Life is good.
Ola, this has been an amazing conversation. Before we wrap up, just a quick fire round, you know. Okay. A little bit of fun.
Okay.
You know? It's been quite an intense conversation. Let's loosen it up a bit. Work from home or work from the office?
Hybrid.
Okay. Money or happiness?
Happiness.
Favorite day of the week?
Friday.
Time in a group or time alone?
Time alone.
Travel to the past or travel to the future?
Future.
Nice. Favorite book?
I don't ever have a favorite book.
Start with why.
The Brené Brown's Vulnerability. Was it Vulnerability? No, Atlas of the Heart. Sorry, Atlas of the Heart.
Love it. Night out or night in?
Night in.
Who has it easier, men or women?
No one does.
Okay. Oh, that's very diplomatic. Name a book you think everyone should read.
I'm not very good with books. I don't really read that much.
Okay. Listen to the What My Best Friend Does podcast.
Thank you. And then finally, actually, are you listening to any good podcasts at the moment? And if so, yeah, what are they?
Oh, I have an array of different podcasts that I listen to. So I listen to a podcast called Say Your Mind by Kelechi Okafor. And it's a mixture. It's a bit like our podcast on the Sofa with Cece. It's a mixture of information, she does do a bit of manifestation, tarot card reading, and talking about stuff that's going on in the world.
She's the one with the On Your Ball Man, right?
Yeah, but she's not with him anymore.
Oh, is she not? Oh, no. Damn. Oh, damn.
She's okay. Not with him anymore. Okay.
Whoops.
Yeah. Okay. Why does everyone always remember her as that person? That's terrible, that is.
Sorry.
That is terrible. That's terrible. Yeah, that's not inclusive at all.
That's why I said it in Yoruba, so people don't know.
That's not inclusive at all. That's not inclusive. I've got an Onyebo man, you know. You've got an Onyebo girl. Why does it matter?
It doesn't. It
exactly.
Doesn't. It doesn't.
But yeah, Say Your Mind is a podcast that I would say. Another one that it's so awful, but it's so good. It's called The Gossip Gays. Okay. And it's just two gay guys talking about absolute nonsense, but it's so funny. Mm-hmm. And then my other one is, I always listen to Oprah Supersoul.
Okay, love it.
Supersoul Oprah is literally like the one. And obviously your podcast when it comes out.
Come on. There we go. All right, we've got a closing tradition.
Do you listen to your own podcast?
Of course I do.
Do you?
Yeah, because you've got editing and all sorts. But yeah, of course I do. You know, we've spoken about a lot today. And based on everything we've discussed and knowing what you know now, what would be your advice to your 16-year-old self? And would you still be doing the same thing?
My 16-year-old self, first of all, mate, come out the closet. It's dark in there. Trust your instincts. Believe in yourself. That would be my advice. And would I still be doing this? I don't know, because I think if I took my own advice and maybe believed in myself more, would I have still gone through the same traumas that led me to do this work? I don't know. But I don't live in any sort of regret, so I kind of feel like that stuff happened to me for me to be able to do this now. So I think that this was always meant to be what I was meant to do.
Amazing conversation, amazing answers. Before we wrap up, where can people find you?
Social media.
Yeah, but I don't know, Cece. I don't know what you want to plug. I'll give you a platform.
So you can find Cece on Instagram at This Is Cece. Cece is Sisu, and that's our handle on all platforms, whether that's Instagram, TikTok, or LinkedIn. Yeah, that's there. You'll find links to our website from there and our podcast from there. So.
Hola, Jide.
thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
This has been an amazing conversation.
It's weird though. Do you not think it's weird?
No.
I think it's weird. It's because I can remember Bayo when he was like, yay, hi. And was running around causing trouble. And him and my brother used to be like Tweedledee and Tweedledum. so now it's nice. It's basically really nice. I'm very proud of you. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Guys, if you've made it to the end of the episode, I want to thank you. Make sure to like, subscribe, share, comment. You know the deal. This has been What My Best Friend Does. If you didn't know, now you know. Over and out.